Yeah. Now, this is actually not the title of my talk. I just put this on. This is just an announcement of a little hands-on or training workshop which we are doing in summer next year, and which really should be meant for students and postdocs, just to learn the power of DFT calculation, but mainly actually the problems. So just if you know people who are interested in that, you can just pass this website, and it's funded by the European network PsyK, as you see it there. Now I leave that on for another minute during my first words. Now my group is mainly interested in doing large-scale calculations of low symmetry systems like defects or surfaces, and in the and mainly actually we are using and developing somewhat efficient DFT codes for such problems. In recent years, our main emphasis is on combining electronic structure theory, and that means density functional theory, with statistical mechanics and thermodynamics. Now, one may think that if one looks at statistical averages, that some errors which we have, of course, in the DFT calculations may not really be too crucial. But actually, what I'd like to show you today is that this hope is often, or sometimes at least, not correct. So what I like to show is that sometimes the errors which we have in DFT, even with the most modern functionals, can be quite significant. Now, there is no question that when we do a theory, electronic structure theory of materials, that density function theory is the way to go or to start with. But I think there's also no question, the more you look into details, that we need a better understanding of exchange correlation functionals, and also we need to develop new methodology to improve these functionals. And this is somewhat what I will do in this talk. I'll tell you a little bit in this talk how we are doing testing accuracy of state-of-the-art exchange correlation functionals of electronic structure theories for real materials. Now, I will try to draw some very general conclusions, but I will use very specific examples in discussing these conclusions and these results on the functional. And the specific system I like to discuss is silicon. It's a 100 surface of silicon, as well as the chemical reactions, looking at the structure and looking at reactivity. This is, by the way, also the most important, technologically important surface. It is, say, used in silico technology and hydrogen adsorption, hydrogen dissociation, hydrogen diffusion, and desorption is all important for many steps in device fabrication. Now, during this long-term project, which is called Realistic Theories of CEM, we have heard several times that silicon is actually well described by density function theory, so we don't really need much of improvement. Now, why do I talk about that? No, I know that what I just said here again in even stronger terms. Silicon is one of the best examples of a nearly free electron material. And we have also heard that in this workshop, that correlation, if this is true, is not too important, and approximate exchange correlation functionals are doing fine. Now, what I will do in this talk is just really showing you that this is really very wrong. And there are big, really frightening big errors. And I like to identify that, which even can really, even in this simple, as you would say, the least correlated system. Okay. Now, the work has been published to a large extent in these two references. And it has been performed by these five people, by two strong women. This is mostly a PhD thesis by Saoirse Healy from Ireland. We do a lot of quantum Monte Carlo, as you will see. The expert on this is Claudia Filippi. And then the man is Eckhard Pehlke, who right now is still in Essen, but just got an offer of for a professorship in Kiel, which he, I trust, will accept. Peter Katzer, Evgeny Penev, and myself, we are still in Berlin. So let me start in setting up the stage and what the silicon surface really looks like, because I guess some of you may not really know that. A surface is really quite a different material to the bulk. One really can say it's by its own right a new material. And you see what is new in the silicon example here. If you just would cut a silicon crystal along the 001 plane, this is how it would look if the atoms would not be allowed to move. What you do is you cut two bonds basically, so that each silicon on the surface, you know that in the bulk a silicon is bonded to four neighbors, on the surface then, on the 001 surface, it's bonded only to two neighbors, basically as my legs are standing here, bonded to the bottom. And then there are these two dangling bonds, like my arms are, each of these dangling bonds with one electron. This is what you do. You cut bonds and you have dangling bonds with one electron only, not with two. And that, of course, is a not energetically low situation. The system really wants to rebind. And so what the system does is it starts from that. This atom likes to get together. And getting together means they reach hands, if you want, and we form these dimers. Then we have this empty space and dimers. The energy gain from here to the formation of dimers is significant. It's 2 electron volts. So whatever theory you do, this is what you certainly get. If you then look more carefully and if you do a density functional theory calculation, what you then get is actually that these dimers, now each dimer has only one dangling bond left, right? One dangling bond is not used. One dangling bond from the left one is used to make this bond to this one, and of course this one. So this dangling bond is now filled with 2 electrons, but we still have 2 dangling bonds, one on the left and one on the right side. And in DFT calculations, at least, the system prefers a buckling. This is actually the lowest state here, where the buckling is down, the next one is up, the next one is down, up and down. The energetics is always a factor 10 less. So going from here to here, it's 2 electron volts. Going from here to here, it's 0.2. Going from here to here, it's 0.02 electron volt. So this is what DFT gets. However, other calculations get something else. And the buckling, if you just think about it for a moment, is really very sensitive to electron correlation effects and also to electron lattice coupling, which some people call a negative U system. And let me just explain you what I mean by that. This is, by the way, what you get if you do Hartree-Fock CI or multi-configuration self-consistent field. You get known buckled. Only DFT get them buckled. So with correlation, you don't get them buckled. You get basically this highest occupied state is a dangling bond, which you see here, and another dangling bond here. And each of these dangling bonds filled with one electron with a weakly bonding arrangement between these two. Density function theory says, with best functionals, that this electron on the right likes to go on the left side. So 2 electrons like to occupy the same orbital, which in principle should be very bad, a very high Hubbard correlation. But actually, this couples to the lattice, and that then causes the tilting. And this together implies that having 2 electrons in one orbital is energetically better than having the 2 electrons in different orbitals. Now, of course, what is the right configuration? That is and has been a big debate, and to some extent, for some people it still is. For us, actually, not, as you will see in a moment. But it's still really a question to understand why this buckling really happens. But that will be one of my questions, and I show you how big correlations and how badly some functionals do on that. The second open question is understanding reactivity or hydrogen adsorption and dissociation, which is called the energy barrier puzzle. If you look at desorption, if you start with a hydrogen-covered surface, and that is really used also in technology to really just saturate possible dangling bonds, hydrogen sits on this dimer, really saturating these dangling bonds. If you heat this thing up, what you see here is somewhat a molecular dynamics study, an ab initio molecular dynamics, which you did 5 years ago. If we just heat it up, the system really goes to a transition state and then leaves. And at the end, we have this, because it's a DFT slab calculation, we have this tilted geometry. The energy barrier, this is just the energetics of this thing, of this transition state, is something like 0.3 electron volt in these calculations. Now, what does experiment tell us? Experiments tell us that, let's go from the right to the left. You can go, of course, from the right to the left, that would be adsorption, or you go from the left to the right, that would be desorption. The experiments which look at hydrogen and putting it on the surface, they find hydrogen does not like to go on the surface. There is a big barrier, and the barrier is bigger than 0.6 electron volts. We had 0.3, the experiment says it's bigger than 0.6. You need really thermal activation to bring hydrogen on the surface. On the other hand, if you look at desorption, this is the puzzle, that desorption does not support this barrier. Desorption experiments show that the hydrogen which comes from the surface is not coming from the top of a hill. If something would come from the top of the hill, it should be vibrational or kinetic energy hot, and you don't see that. There's no heat in this desorbing hydrogen. So that is this so-called barrier puzzle. If you go from left to right, you see something energetically different going from, than going from right to left. And looking at calculations, if people do highest quality CI and highest quality density function theory, they give a very different description and very different energetics. I'll show you the numbers in a moment. So we want to understand what is really going on and where do we really stand, what do we understand about these problems. So where do we stand with these first principle description of materials when different methods differ so much? Principle, often we say that structure and vibrations are well described by density function theory. But I put here not only an exclamation mark, but also a question mark, because you already seen that this is in principle a very basic, simple question you're asking, and we're not really able to answer that easily. And the reason, part of the reason is somewhat that for big systems and surfaces usually means we need a lot of atoms and a lot of electrons, such calculations are not really black box. It's really interesting, very often you see very good agreement in the published papers, but very often this good agreement is due to bad calculations. So the better you do the calculation, somewhat the worse the agreement usually or very often gets. And so what I really think one has to be very careful, and there are two examples in particular we have investigated in the last years where if you do the best calculation you really can do, you get even qualitative different results than experiment and other calculation give you. One is carbon monoxide and platinum. The theory really tells carbon monoxide likes to occupy the hollow side on the surface. Nature does not follow the DFT prediction. Nature puts the carbon monoxide on the top side. So that's one of the qualitative difference. And for silicon 001, you will see in a moment where the problems really are. Errors in total energies, and you will see that in a moment, can be noticeable. And even for energy differences, very often we argue, and sometimes we are right, very often we argue that if you look at energy differences, the errors really cancel and we are lucky. But what you will see in a moment, there can be still several tenths of an EV, very close to an electron volt. Errors can be huge for some systems, for some questions, even in energy differences. Of course, we have to do better. In particular, if you want to understand surface kinetics and reactions for energy barriers. And so what I like to do in this work is to show you how we correct the exchange correlation energy by using quantum Monte Carlo. Now, quantum Monte Carlo, we have heard several times, there's in different aspects. I think Rosa has used quantum Monte Carlo, the impurity guys are using quantum Monte Carlo. Everybody means something completely different by that. And also I mean something different by that. What I will, and I should just sketch this in a moment, what I mean by quantum Monte Carlo is really evaluating the many body wave functions and then the wave function and the expectation value of the energy. Now, does it really mean that we go away from density function theory? And I would say not completely, but to some extent, yes. The direct DFT route seems to be pretty complicated. And maybe it's even not feasible if you want the accuracy which we think we should. We all know that the exchange correlation energy stems, of course, from many-body theory. We also know that, in principle, this is a functional of the density. But maybe this functional is so complicated that you cannot handle it. It's a very interesting statement. It's a functional of the density, but it's really can be so complicated that you can't handle it. And maybe for the accuracy which we are interested in, and in many things you guys are interested in, it's very clear, and also for this case, we have to use some detour. We cannot really just evaluate it as a function of density. We need actually a detour to get a better accuracy. And this is not a very big change in philosophy. We already know that for the very simple thing, the kinetic energy of non-interacting particles, in principle, the kinetic energy of non-interacting particles is also a density functional. But we are not evaluating that. The fantastic thing of Kohn-Chem theory is that we really go to the single particle wave functions. To evaluate this thing, we know that we can write a series expansion, but to evaluate it properly, and the kinetic energy is extremely important, we also go to wave functions. So what we think is we should calculate also a correction to this functional from many-body wave functions, because many-body theory is so subtle. There are so many nice and little and strange things. I think there is probably no way around a many-body treatment that can be many-body wave function or can be self-energies. I just wrote here the energy function as dot, dot A, because I think whatever we do in the next years or decades, this will be a dot, dot A functional. The dot dot is LD or GG, The only thing that will survive is the A, that means approximation. I think, no way to really to doing much better, but we can do reasonably good, but I think corrections can be significant. And this is not giving up completely the philosophy. You could say we don't care too much. Psi zero, we also know, is a function of the density. So going this detour, we're not leaving. Okay, yeah. Right. Okay, so how are we doing this? What I want to sell you here, what is the methodology of our approach? I think we have to, if you do material science, we have to start with density function theory, supercells, or if you do surfaces, that is called slabs. But we also, I think, should do cluster calculations. We can look at the topology of the potential energy surface of atoms. We can look where atoms like to diffuse, how they like to move. But still, we, I think, should add also cluster calculations. And the reason of this cluster calculation is only the next line. Because for clusters, we also can really solve the many-body problem, for example, using quantum Monte Carlo. And then we can compare. We can compare the cluster calculation in DFT and the cluster calculation in quantum Monte Carlo. And this difference between the clusters, as we will see in a moment, converges very nicely. This is our correction term. And what I will discuss now is how big is this correction term for these simple systems, which are so, in principle, nicely behaved as silicon is. So again, here, a sketch of what we do. We start with density function theory, with the best functionals which we think are available or which are also, say, good to handle. We then do this not only for slabs, but also for clusters. For these, we then do Hartree-Fock or some low-level CI calculations. We then do variational Monte Carlo to include via Jastrow factor the correlation. And this we use for the last step, which is a diffusion Monte Carlo, which just uses the nodal structure from the VMC. I just sketched that a little bit more because, again, this is a different QMC to what you have. What we actually do is the geometry comes from the DFT calculation, and also the cluster is actually used with the geometries, so that these two cluster calculations really do not differ in geometry. They just differ in the quality of the wave function, basically.
But then you should readjust the geometry.
No. Let me come back to this in a moment. You should not, because you need really slabs or extended system to get a good geometry. But I show this also in a moment. So what we actually do is we start with variational Monte Carlo. That means we start with a standard quantum chemistry program. Our wave function is just a sum over some determinants, or maybe it's only one determinant. In our surface calculation, which I describe here, we just use a CI with four active orbitals, where the HOMO and the HOMO minus one and the LUMO and the LUMO plus one are considered. So it's a low-level CI calculation. We then multiply this wave function from the cluster calculation, from this, we use actually the GAMES program, but you can use anything else. This is a fast thing. It's correlated by some Jastrow factor. And this Jastrow factor has the following terms. It has a function which depends on the electron-electron distance. This is just helping or providing the fact that electrons really don't like to get together too close. There should be a cusp when they get close. And there are some other functions which are on the, depend on the electron-nuclei distances. And we have a lot of these functions, and we combine them or sum them up with some, in the beginning, unknown coefficients. And these coefficients are then determined to find really the best correlated wave functions. And in the examples which we use about 40 parameters. And that also means that these functions, which here are not too important, we use local atom-centered functions, some Fourier terms as well. So here it's summarized again. The first thing is really this variational Monte Carlo. We start with a many-body wave function with a guess, which depends on many, many coordinates, as many electrons as we have. I just make an abbreviation calling it capital R. With this wave function, we calculate the expectation value of the many-body.
So,
actually, we do a Hartree-Fock. We do a Hartree-Fock here. This has been tested, and it doesn't seem to be terribly important. I mean, I think the only guy who has really tested it was Fahy. He has also tried to optimize his wave function at the end. It seems to be not so important, but you will see in a moment, actually, that most of that we don't use anyhow. So we start with an Hartree-Fock, and maybe, as I said, actually, in some of the samples, even a low-level CI calculation. We then evaluate this expectation value in this high-dimensional space, but actually we don't evaluate it in the, as it's written down in this line. We just multiply this thing by psi and divide by psi so that we get something like an energy. H times psi t is an energy divided by psi times psi t trial squared. As I said, this is an energy which we call the local energy. And this can be easily calculated using Monte Carlo, and we use a version of the Metropolis algorithm derived by Cyrus Umriga. In fact, you can optimize now these 40 parameters, these Cs which enter the Jastrow factor, by looking for the minimum of ET. It's a little bit more stable to look actually at the variance of EL. Because what you see here, if psi t is an eigenfunction, then E times psi t is just, H is times psi is just E, and then this thing is a constant. So just looking at the variance of EL is one way to find the minimum. This is a nice and very efficient procedure, and you get better than density function theory usually, but you don't really reach the accuracy which we really want. And the reason is somehow in these wave functions, as Balazs just asked actually, in our Hartree-Fock wave function, in our Hartree-Fock basis basically. And the second problem is also that this variational problem is not really straightforward. It's, we don't have gradients, so it's actually also somewhat a variational bias in that, how we do this optimization. So we have to do better. This is our starting point. It gives us some information about the wave function, but we have to go better. Actually, there are several algorithms. You just actually play around. It's really more an art than a method, I would say, at this point. Because you don't have gradient, there is really not a very systematic way to do that. Now, the next thing is then we want to go better, and the better thing is called diffusion Monte Carlo. Diffusion Monte Carlo is an iterative projection technique. Means the following. We start with some guessed wave function. That could be the one which you just have calculated, but could be also even the worst guess. Multiplying with e to the minus h tau means that from this wave function, we just select the different eigenstates, and we multiply these different eigenstates with e to the e tau. That means the high energy states will be damped away. And we do this multiplication again and again. We somewhat kill the high-lying energy states, and what only survives is the ground state. And you can just rewrite this, as you see easily, in terms of a Green's function Monte Carlo. Having a wave function at a certain time, you propagate this to another time, and at the end, what it really means, you kill the high level, the high energy states. This is just a schematic way how it's really done with some stochastic method. If this would be our potential, and we start with just points in real space, if we just represent our wave functions with these points in real space, and the propagator, and we call these things walkers, we just solve a diffusion equation with a short time Green's function. There is life and death on these things as well. We die and propagate and diffuse up to the point where the things are more getting together and indicating that this should be the right wave function. Now, what I said is correct if this would be a diffusion equation and if this would be just like a density and having only one sign. But of course, as we know, in a thermionic problem, it has different signs. And so what we actually have to do, and this is the main approximation, we have to constrain the whole calculation. We have to do what I just described for each nodal pocket. And that is what is called the fixed node approximation. We start, and this is the only thing we take from the previous step from this variation in Monte Carlo. We start with this wave function that defines us where the nodes are, and then in these different nodal pockets, we do this optimization. So under this constraint, we find the best energy, the lowest energy under this constraint. That is still then probably not the very lowest one, but it's getting actually remarkably close, as you will see. So this is the methodology, and now let me come to the numbers and to the specific system. And that is, as I said, silicon, clean surface, and hydrogen. The clean surface, just very briefly, the experimental situation. At room temperature, this is how STM sees the surface. I said actually how it sees, how the surface looks. I'm not saying this is the surface. They look symmetric at room temperature. Below 120 K, they look in the zigzag way, and below 20, actually, it looks again symmetric. Now, surface core level shift always sees independent of temperature bucket dimers. It sees two different silicon atoms. And this is just summarized here on this view graph. Surface core level shift is a very easy and nice tool. You look at a core level in the bulk, and you look at a core level at the surface, look what energy difference they have if you excite them, and this tells you a little bit about the local chemistry of this atom. Now, very often, as in this view graph at least, core level shifts are interpreted as an initial state shift, just looking at Kohn-Chem energy levels, but this is certainly not good enough. And so what we have done since many, many years is, of course, doing total energy differences or transition states. And if you do this for the silicon 001 surface, what you see, first, the dashed line is actually the initial state approximation, just to show you how bad it is. We see, because we have two atoms in our two different tilted silicon dimer, we get two core levels, the dashed one blue and the dashed one red. But if you include final state screening, because after you have removed in core level, the other electrons will rearrange, and this changes, of course, your total energy. If you include this, then the blue dashed one goes to this blue bar and the red one to this red bar. And what you see is there's a big shift for the blue and a smaller shift for the red. The surprise is actually that the shift is to the right and not to the left, because people usually think that a screening at a surface is less efficient than in the bulk. Surface, half of the material is removed, so the argument is then there should be also less screening. Here, screening at the surface is better than in the bulk. The reason is the following, that there's a nice new screening mechanism. There is this empty dangling bond. We said that two electrons like to go in one, but there's one empty dangling bond. And what happens, as soon as a core level is produced, the empty dangling bond is shifted below the Fermi level, it's getting occupied, and this energy gain is given to the photoelectron. Anyhow, if you then compare the total energy difference or transition set calculation with the experiment, they get actually very close to what the experiments measure. But the most important thing is even simpler than just the agreement. There are two peaks in the theory and there are two peaks in the experiment, and that means there are two different silicon atoms. They can't be parallel, they have to be tilted.
This is a constraint on the A, right? Because you have
a constraint between the electronic
state with
the core. It's a constraint DFT with a core hole.
And is there some ambiguity in how you define the wave function of the core hole?
Actually, it basically does not depend. So different core holes have even the same shift. So the 1S looks basically the same thing as a 2P. Now, what is then the problem in the calculations from the, say, configuration interaction and from the DFT? Now, configuration interaction, of course, needs to do clusters. You can only do a good job on that if you really have a small cluster. And so what we first did, we just looked how does it really depend on clusters. Usually we are doing supercells, and this is what we find. But of course, let's just look at the same clusters as the CI people do. And this is actually the cluster they can do, silicon 9. The backbones are all saturated with hydrogen. This is just the easiest, and for this system really also a very good way to do some type of embedding. And we have only one silicon at the surface, which we call the surface dimer here. Silicon 9 in DFT is also not buckled. Only if you go to silicon 15, a buckling starts. And for silicon 21, it's really getting close to the true answer to the slab. And you see the angles here, but let's just look at the energies. The small cluster has no buckling. The 15-atom cluster, 0.1 electron volts. But we only get to the number which we also get for the slab if you use a cluster of 21. To get the right treatment of electron lattice coupling, one needs to go to big clusters where so far you cannot do really configuration interaction calculation. But you can do quantum Monte Carlo. And this figure just summarizes different clusters, silicon 9, silicon 15, silicon 21, and the slab, comparing different functionals, LDA, Birke-Purdue. This is the GGA, Purdue Wang 91, a B-lip, B3-lip, which the chemists like so much, and the diffusion Monte Carlo, so the best thing we really can do. What you see is all these functionals are really behaving somewhat similar. Buckling starts at 15 atom clusters. It's getting close to the true answer at 21, but it's still slightly different to the slab. But if we do the really correlated calculation, the quantum Monte Carlo, the energy is only half of what we get in the GGA. So it's not 0.2 electron volt which we gain by buckling, it's only 0.1, but otherwise qualitatively it's the same thing. We need big clusters to identify the effect, and then if you just compare the energy differences between GGA and quantum Monte Carlo, we see the correction is 0.1 electron volt. It's a small number if you want, but still actually it's a big enough number because it's 50% of the effect. So going to these correlated wave functions, we see a noticeable reduction to 1/2. And this is then in nice agreement with even the experimental situation. No, you optimize. You just by a similar. It's basically an ab initio molecular dynamics. It goes downhill, so it just goes there.
You calculate the force.
You calculate the force. Yes. So at room temperature, it's very clear now that the symmetric dimers which the SCM sees is actually not really symmetric, but it's a dimer with this 0.12 electron volt energy, which actually flips several thousand times back and forth. And of course, if you look at something which flips back several thousand times, it looks symmetric. At 120 Kelvin, and this is actually experimentally consistent with 0.15 EV, you see as you freeze in these tilted dimers, the quantum Monte Carlo result with the DFT combination gives 0.12, so very close to that. And what people see below 20 Kelvin, we really don't know. We think, actually, from all the calculation we do, it should be always buckled. But of course, if you have very cool temperatures, maybe there is some conductivity problems, some SDM problems, which really brings the system in an excited state. So there we think is more experimental work necessary. Then we come to the second example, which is even more dramatic, although knowing the structure and not being able to do it easily is also already dramatic, but now comes really dramatic energies. Asking how is the energetics of having hydrogen on the silicon surface, as I said, is as in technology, and we want to remove these hydrogens going there. This is one of the pathways. It goes over a hill, which is, as I said earlier, if hydrogen molecule would come on the surface, it usually runs against this hill, and that's why the sticking coefficient of silicon with respect to hydrogen adsorption is low. The barrier which with the hydrogen which should adsorb Cs is bigger than 0.6 electron volts. The density function theory calculation, the best you can do, let's just look here at the desorption or at the adsorption barrier, it's 0.37, so it's somewhat smaller than the experiment gets. But I think it's noticeably smaller. It's smaller than what you really want. But let us just look at the desorption energy, where we get 2.27 in the DFT calculation. Now our friends from the chemistry, they also calculate the same thing with correlations, and they don't get 2.27. They get something between 3.2 and 3.7. There's one electron volt difference. Depending on what methodology you use, it's a one electron volt difference. It's really huge, and that makes you, of course, worry what is really going on here. Now, the first thing which you already may expect from what I said earlier is there is a cluster effect. Good CI calculations can be only done for silicon 9, and what I show you here is how things depend on LDA, Birkel-Purdue, and the GGA, Purdue-Bang 91, how things depend on cluster size. Indeed, small clusters give a much too high desorption barrier. It moves down by 0.6 electron volt if you go to the slab. But still, the 2.8 is half a volt different from the correlated electron situation. So we wanted again to do a quantum Monte Carlo. We want to compare again in this methodology, comparing the exchange correlation functional energy with the quantum Monte Carlo. We have to be careful that everything in the numerics is correct. I don't really want to go through this too much. We tested different pseudopotentials. We tested different Hartree-Fock and other wave functions. The nice thing is we can do one comparison where we can compare a quantum Monte Carlo cluster calculation with a CI, but of course only for the small one. For the small silicon 9, there is good is a CI calculation. And so the way we do the quantum Monte Carlo with the statistical error of 0.06, you see the best CI calculation in the quantum Monte Carlo agree very nicely on these reaction energies, on the desorption, and on the adsorption. That is just a confirmation that at least on the numerical aspects of how we do the integration, we don't induce any error. Now the advantage is that with quantum Monte Carlo, we can go to bigger systems. And so we looked actually not only at the silicon 9 that was just used as a test, we looked at silicon 15, silicon 21, silicon 27. And from this trend, and comparing again the cluster QMC with the cluster PW191, we find again how big the error is. A little bit about the physics of the system, which we learned when we did this, although I'm not talking too much about the physics. One of the reaction pathways is this, what is called the H2 star. We start with a clean surface. This is just a cartoon of dimers of the clean surface. So three dimers and a free hydrogen molecule, which I don't show. And now we bring in the hydrogen molecule and adsorb. We have to go over this hill. And at the end, the hydrogen is sitting here. Here is one hydrogen, and there is sitting the other hydrogen. This is one pathway which we calculated, and that certainly plays some role. But there's another pathway if we come in. There's a possibility we start with a clean surface for the initial sticking. We come in with a hydrogen molecule. We run against this barrier, apparently. But maybe the hydrogen does not go to the ground state in its configuration. It first goes on two dimers, and only later, with some delay, it just goes on the same to find really the structural ground state. And maybe if there is a higher coverage, and that could be the way for desorption, we have two dimers occupied by four hydrogen atoms. And maybe it's not that one hydrogen molecule goes away from one dimer, but maybe it goes from these two dimers so that we have an intermediate state where these two silicons are occupied, and only later this goes down. That actually is a nice path which doesn't have an energy barrier, and as I showed you, some experiments indicate there is no energy barrier. Now, as I said, we do this for all these clusters with the geometries which we get from the DFT slab calculations. And what we get then is the error bars. Actually, not the error bars, the error, the correction. And for the desorption, which is this energy from here to here, the important energy for desorption, the error or the correction we need over the best functionals is 0.9 electron volt. This is something we really cannot live with in this system. It's really a big thing, which really means we should really include this. For some, it's just 0.2, 0.3, 0.5, but still it can be as big at 0.9, and you only find out when you do the calculation. Okay, now let me actually just skip this. Let me just summarize and comparing a little bit with experiment. As I mentioned, there are several mechanisms. This H2 mechanism is actually the one which I mentioned. This is which is that the intra-dimer. We have hydrogen on one dimer, and these two hydrogen atoms just are removed. And if you look, DFT plus this correction, which I call here just QMC, but it's actually DFT plus correction, and comparing this with the experimental result, we indeed get now a barrier which is comparable to the experimental situation for the adsorption. For the desorption, we are not good yet. So we have to consider that in a moment. The reaction energy is also good. But we see that there is this other reaction pathway, this H2 mechanism. This is where hydrogen, which is sitting on one dimer, is first going actually on two dimers as an intermediate and then removed. And for this, the energetics, which we calculate with all this machinery, again, you see the adsorption barrier is very compatible, also compatible with the first path. That means these two paths will really both play a role. The desorption energy is not good to experiment. The reaction is very good. And for the H4, which we think is the one for desorption, we see that indeed, with this statistical error, we find a zero, close to zero, or 0.19, with an error of plus minus 0.2 barrier, very close to experiment. So, with this machinery, we think we have improved a pretty good agreement with experiment on this adsorption barrier. What we call the inter-dimer pathway for desorption competes. That means these two, we have two different mechanisms which actually will be present both. We still have a problem in this line in the desorption. We are too high than the experiment is. We did everything we could, and so at the end we felt maybe it's not really our fault anymore. Maybe there is actually a problem in the experiment, because the desorption is a particular complicated experiment. You have to be careful that you really get the end, the last hydrogen moving away, and that's of course a lot affected by defects and steps and what have you.
I think it's hard to understand. I mean,
QMC is above and LBA is below, and the difference compared to experience is more or less the same.
I think above and below, you never can predict that, right? Because all these are energy differences. So what is above or below, you don't really know. But
there is no good agreement with one or another. I suppose they are both the same. If you think the difference is...
No, what I think is actually, we think that say, the 0.29 is certainly not consistent with bigger than 0.6. So that's what we are saying. What we're saying in this adsorption barrier, which indicates that there is a very low sticking coefficient, we only get that right if we go to this, include this correction. And if we include the correction, we are still not explaining the desorption energy of the last molecule leaving the surface. And we believe this may be actually due to the experimental situation. But we're not completely sure. But we did the best we think we can do. So let me just conclude what I wanted to show you. I wanted to show you a little bit about the physics of the system. But in particular, I wanted to show you a little bit of methodology looking at these corrections of what I call this dot dot A functionals. Corrections can be significant, even for systems where we didn't expect big corrections, like silicon. They can be really big, they can be much bigger than we expected. Much of the error, I should say, is if you really analyze it due to self-interaction. But a significant part, say 20-30%, is probably due to correlation. The quantum Monte Carlo approach, the way I've described it, is, I think, quite certainly feasible and certainly also very accurate to calculate this type of correction, because we can go to clusters and making these clusters as big as we want so that we see a systematic cluster convergence. And this we can only do with quantum Monte Carlo. And this cluster convergence is extremely important. The size is really crucial, and that, of course, we all know somewhat, because if a cluster calculation is, if a cluster is too small and we want to look at correlations, if you force your electrons to be localized more than they really want, because your cluster is small, you get too big correlations, you get an incorrect electron lattice coupling. But if you do this all together, we think you get at least some insights into the experimental situation, which I gave you only a little bit of the flavor, that's what I wanted to do. Thank you very much.
Questions?
I still like to go back to this last table that you showed. Can you show it again? I mean, maybe I don't understand. Mm-hmm. EPW91, the energies are 0.46, and QMC is 0.75?
Yes.
And the experiment is 0.6, right?
Right.
I mean, if you take the differences, basically, they are, you know, one is below, one is above.
Actually, the experiment is bigger than 0.6. So it's actually
and
probably...
And the other one is exactly the same, 2.5.
Yes. But what I'm saying is, this is not the only pathway. There's another pathway where we have quite nice experimental evidence now, which is this other mechanism, which goes first to this intermediate state. And there, the barrier is 0.6. There are several pathways, and experimental, of course, all these pathways are complete.
I mean, why this buckling stuff will not be disordered, for instance? I mean, I suppose it's ordered in your case, right?
Actually, the buckling stuff will be disordered, but that is not really a big energy. Everything will vibrate, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is disordered. But yes, in your calculation, everything is ordered, I suppose. It's one, they go one way or another, no?
As I said, if you compare, say, all the buckling in the same way, which is a 2x2 structure or alternating, the energy difference is 0.02 electron volts.
Really?
So this is not on this scale which we are discussing at the moment.
Okay, Walder.
Matthias, how did you come to the conclusion that the major error was the self-interaction and the correlation was less important? I would have expected the correlation to be more important and the self-interaction to be less important, because your orbitals are very much delocalized and the self-interaction should not be big.
Yeah. You're right with your question that this is actually something which we have not completed so far. We have looked a little bit in the self-interaction in the following sense, that we looked at some functionals which are self-interaction free. The B3 lib has actually a large correction, the self interaction. And that gets much closer to the true answer, much closer to the quantum Monte Carlo than the other ones. But what we are actually planning to do is look more carefully in really identifying self-interaction effects and correlation. Now, one should also say in doing a self-interaction calculation is a factor of 10 more expensive than the standard functionals. So it's getting also more expensive. It's still, we want to know that, right? So from the comparison of the different functionals and knowing how B3 lib and B lib and all the others that I showed you, how they behave, that conclusion was drawn.
So, Ballas?
Well, your strategy seemed to be that we do LDA and then for big enough a system, but we can really do Monte Carlo only for a small system, and then you do LDA for a small system, look at the difference and somehow cluster, and then you extrapolate.
Yes.
Now, would you say that this is the beginnings of the great synthesis that this little workshop is all about, where dynamical mean field theory is supposed to solve a cluster, small or big, a matter of debate, more or less with quantum Monte Carlo exactly, and then match on to some outside thing which is LDA based. So would you see that that's a good direction to go?
I mean, I would say it's somewhat in a similar philosophy. Right, it's somewhat a pragmatic approach. One really should say that, right?
But it seems that this is the got to be pragmatic. But then there is a song, DMFT, LDA without you.
Yeah.
And then
that's right. No, so what I wanted to say here is, we get all the energetics and the topology more or less reliable, but actually more or less, sometimes even not, as you have seen, with very good slab and supercell calculations. But then at the important points, I think it's really necessary to do a correlated calculation, either with some impurity solver or actually with the approach I've discussed it here. I think one should be really alerted that even systems where we didn't expect big errors, because there are all energy differences, right? And even in these energy differences, we get error of several tens of an EV.
Maybe I could make some comment on this. Of course, it's a paradise, but when we ask Matthew Foulkes, so he says that why you guys could calculate only 5 orbital and we calculate a 200 electron? It's a different coincidence, maybe in the future.
Yes, but the idea to include correlation is a philosophy, similarity.
Right? No, but this method is much simpler.
You mentioned at the beginning of your talk cobalt CO on platinum. Can you say something about which kind of errors you found there? Because that's probably a little bit more correlated than silicon.
Yeah, but actually this is probably even simpler. The error there is about 0.2 electron volts.
And it's in the barrier?
No, it's really in the energetics. I mean, the carbon monoxide goes into a high coordination site in the theory. Only the experiment doesn't follow that. It goes really on top in the experiment. It's somewhat a general tendency that all the functionals which we use favor slightly a high coordination. I mean, that comes maybe from this gellium-based background. So they favor high coordination, and in the carbon monoxide, it's an error of 0.2 electron volt.
Matthias, but the error is in carbon monoxide place or in the platinum?
In the system.
Okay, Razor.
So how much more expensive is to use the quantum Monte Carlo on clusters with respect to GGA?
Let me put it this way. The first thing in all these calculations is to find really roughly the geometry. And you usually do probably of the order of 100 or more than 100 geometries, which you really test and look. You look at your topology because you have many atoms which move. Then you look at some of the geometries and you do the quantum Monte Carlo. Now, if you have only one geometry, the quantum Monte Carlo is a factor of 100 more expensive. Actually, it's more CPU time, factor of 100. However, I was just hesitating in saying to more expensive because the quantum Monte Carlo runs on cheaper machinery. I mean, for these many atom surface system, you really need expensive parallel machines like Cray on IBM SP4. The quantum Monte Carlo doesn't need much memory, doesn't need much communication. You just do this on a PC. So it takes much more time, but it's not really so much more expensive.
Could you, in principle, optimize geometry, so do a lot of this...
With quantum Monte Carlo?
No, I mean combination. No. You always do geometry with this, but you could imagine that geometry changed.
Yeah. I didn't show you this. We also looked at the transition set geometry and other geometries with different functionals, and very little with the quantum Monte Carlo. The geometries seem to be actually pretty safe. So that's why I think the combination is a clever way to go. We are not able at this moment to do an efficient geometry optimization with quantum Monte Carlo because we don't have efficient forces.
Okay, but it's also probably system dependent, because I remember this carbon clusters, these works of this Urbana Berkeley group, they have completely different even geometry. And
that depends again on the energy scale, yeah. Right?
So just to make sure I understood, so basically you get all the metastable states, just that the energy, the relative energy of those metastable states seems to be wrong.
Yeah.
Steve.
It seems to me if you thought about applying this to a strongly correlated system, you would run into trouble in your quantum Monte Carlo would have trouble because you might not be able to get a decent trial wave function. Is that correct?
I guess actually it is correct, but one also should be at this moment still a little bit more optimistic. We didn't run into problems yet, but yes, I mean you need, as I have said, right? You need the nodal structure of your wave function, and I think the way I see it is that the quantum Monte Carlo level is somewhat where we were with DFT 20 years ago. I mean, I started somewhat in 79 or so, and quantum Monte Carlo is maybe in the beginning of the 80s. So that's where we are, and this type of questions we still are fighting with. I somewhat believe that what you're saying is right, but so far the calculations give us more reason to be optimistic than being pessimistic.
Other questions? So if not, let's thank Matthias for a very nice talk. So we have a half an hour break.